because I think I could say a few words of introduction. Not because I believe that anyone even remotely acquainted with political life in Italy and with promotion of liberal ideas in Europe will be unfamiliar with the name of Giovanni Malagodi. But I think I should express particular thanks to Signor Malagodi for having made it particular to be here with us already this morning and to be with us at all. Because being president of the Liberal World Union, he just has come back from this meeting at Brussels. And besides that, he is very busy in Italian politics at the moment. So I want to thank you very much for having come, and I ask you to give us your message. Signor Malagodi.
First of all, I'd like to thank the chairman for his very kind words, and to thank you all for the invitation to this society and meeting. This is the first time I have the honor to address you, and I feel that this is a considerable responsibility. President, as Professor Röpke has just said, that I happen to be busy in Italian politics. But I believe that being busy in a meeting like this should mean more for the politics of a country than very many of the things we usually do. So happens, however, that some other politicians don't think so and try to destroy even the short vacations during which we ought to turn to more general things and take our minds off small local affairs. Anyhow, I have, on the request of Professor Leoni, as you will have seen in the folder, contributed a paper on liberalism and democracy, and I will not repeat here what is written in that paper. I will only say that the essence of what I have tried to say there is this. Democracy, in the sense not of an Oxford village with an elder with a fluent white beard, but democracy at its ugliest, if you like, mass democracy is with us, is the reality of the contemporary world, considering the increase in numbers, if anything else, which takes place now in the world. I think it's something like 50 million human beings a year by which the world increases. Mass democracy is with us. The problem is, can liberalism make turn mass democracy into a non-mass society? Are we condemned as a totalitarian democracy, or can we have liberal democracy? This is the problem with which, in fact, we are faced in the world. And the great headlong conflict between the East and the West is, in its essence, the conflict between liberal democracy and totalitarian democracy. And that is why we all feel that we are engaged in it each week. I will not repeat here what is written in that paper. I will only say that the essence of what I have tried to say there is this. A democracy, in the sense not of an Oxford village with an elder with a fluent white beard, but democracy at its ugliest, if you like. Mass democracy is with us, is the reality of the contemporary world, considering the increase in numbers, if anything else, which takes place now in the world. I think it's something like 50 million human beings a year by which the world increases. Mass democracy is with us. The problem is, can liberalism make turn mass democracy into a non-mass society? Are we condemned as a totalitarian democracy, or can we have liberal democracy? This is the problem with which, in fact, we are faced in the world. And the great headlong conflict between the East and the West is, in its essence, the conflict between liberal democracy and totalitarian democracy. And that is why we all feel that we are engaged in it, each one of us, with all his human worth, not only with his mind, but with his heart and with his believe is that totalitarian democracy is a thing of the past. It is a new addition and the modern conditions of the traditional way of life of humanity. A traditional way of life which had a deep meaning in ancient times, which has no meaning whatsoever today. And the liberal democracy is the logical outcome of the whole development of human history. And that therefore we must, as liberals, set aside all nostalgia, set aside all hesitations, not ask us, is it possible to extract liberal democracy from the mass society? We must tell ourselves, it is our duty to do it, and it is the only reasonable outcome of the whole development of Western civilization since its most ancient times, and especially since the great Christian Revolution, and since the political revolutions of the 18th and 19th century. I know there are difficulties, but the real difficulty is that many of us have not yet made up their minds that this is necessary and are not yet working for it. Many of us are still dwelling too much, I believe, on the difficulties of the task and not on the opportunities of the task. Many of us are looking at some new institutions, some new technical devices, as if they were necessarily bad, without thinking that the technical device is never either good or bad. It is what we make out of it. Take the mass communications media, for instance, that is so often quoted as an instance of the destruction of any possibility of a liberal democracy. Well, it is not true. They can be a worthy instrument for the creation of a liberal democracy if we use them in the proper way. But that, I say again, is true of anything. It's true of anything that is purely technical, that is purely external. The battle here is really a battle of the mind. It is really to know, if I say, in the whole course of European history, down from Greece and Rome and Julian Christendom, will have its natural outcome or not. Well, I have tried to elaborate on that in my paper. I have tried to set out at the end, you will have noticed, or you will notice if you read it, some of the practical, political, social problems with which this great fight confronts us. And here I would like to add to all this some words on the difficulties with which we are faced. Not on the technical difficulties, but on some of the internal difficulties of our own work. Naturally, these things I will say with a particular background of an Italian, A continental, B a European, C. What I say is not necessarily true or very relevant for America. It is perhaps only partially relevant for UK. It is relevant, I believe, for France, Spain, Portugal, and Italy, for the Catholic countries of the continent. It is certainly potentially relevant for Germany, Belgium, and the other Protestant or half-Protestant countries of the continent. And I don't use these religious words for qualifications just as a way of saying. I think they have some connection with the matter in front of us. Well, it is, you know quite well, Professor Rutger reminded us this morning of it, that in Italy we have the largest communist party in Europe. We not only have that, but we have a socialist party that up to now is in its large majority at least practically indistinguishable from the communist party. I think the second largest party is the French party, and I'm very much afraid that if there were free elections tomorrow in Spain and Portugal, both parties, French and Italian, might be proportionately outnumbered by the Spanish and Portuguese communist and extreme left-wing socialist parties. We also in Italy have the largest Catholic political party in Europe. And I say Catholic because the German CDU, as you know, certain sense on the way to their liberalization, but they are not yet entirely liberalized. And as I say, to have to fight with them against the forces of authoritarian democracy forces us to continuous compromises, puts us continuously in the face of specific difficulties. These difficulties are so much greater if we conceive of our task not as purely a task of criticism of others, but as a constructive task, as a task of trying to do all we can in order to get some way, some day or other, to liberal democracy. This means that we, in fact, want to conquer the masses. Conquer them in the name of liberalism. Perhaps tomorrow the name of the party that will conquer them will be different. That is of no great importance. The fact is, we want to conquer them for 100% liberalism. This is our aim, necessarily. But this means, first of all, under the specific circumstances I have quoted, that we must break down the psychological obstacles to this, which consist in the fact that the masses have been persuaded by a century or more of socialist and Catholic propaganda that liberalism is their enemy, that their safety is outside liberalism. It is not only a matter of aspirations being taken for rights, as Mr. Lowley put it a moment ago, it is a matter of a century-old propaganda quite explicitly directed against liberalism and very logically based on certain premises which have come to be accepted by vast masses on the continent of Europe, and specifically in these countries I quoted and in this country, as being obvious, as being things that can no longer be discussed. Well, of course, our battle is first of all a battle of intelligence. It's a battle of propaganda. It's a battle of discussing the problems of the day in liberal terms. There I must say how deeply I felt the words of Professor Einaudi. I would say in this case President Einaudi addressed us this morning, but more than the words of an economist, they were the words of a man who reminds his fellow colleagues their first duty is to be honest with themselves and honest with those who listen to them. Well, but we are not only confronted with an intellectual difficulty and with the psychological obstacle to which I pointed out. We are confronted with something more difficult still, which is, I will express it in German, because it is difficult to translate it in any other language, as Sinistrismo, Professor Röpke says in specific Italian, so is Wille zur Macht, almost specifically German, as a word, not as a fact. And as a fact, we are confronted after a century of socialist and Catholic propaganda with a very specific Wille zur Macht of the socialist and communist parties and of the Catholic parties. It's not only a matter of denying intellectual validity to liberalism, it's a matter of political groupings that have formed themselves, hardened themselves in a century-long battle and which now want to go to power, and necessarily want to go to power not with liberal ends, but with illiberal ends, to destroy a large part of what still remains of liberalism, or, which is even more important, to make it impossible to create the new elements of liberalism which are necessary. Now, on the continent of Europe, in this country, one of the few Machtpositionen, positions of power which are left to liberalism, is the state. It may seem extraordinary, but the state is, very grosso modo, a liberal institution. It is a liberal democratic state with a traditional division of powers, with a traditional at least lip service, but to some extent a real service, to the notion of a Rechtsstaat, uno Stato di diritto, of the rule of law. Therefore, we as liberals in these countries, in this country, must be very, very defense of what exists, and his growing, in fact, of a free society, of an open society, of a society where free enterprise is important and is getting more and more important, of a society where it is, you can still speak, or you can speak and write and discuss. It is more important than the decentralization of institutions, which in fact, in Italy, under the present circumstances, would be first of all a communist instrument. The fact is, even the Democratic Christian Party, that was traditionally for this decentralization, is now for it in words, against it in fact. Or at least very troubled about it in fact. Now we take up another instance, which also has some connection with what Mr. Russell Kirk said this morning, the question of education. We are, as liberals, in favor of the freedom of education. But in the same time, we are confronted in Italy, as in other Catholic countries, but in Italy more than in others, with this paradox that the only real free education left is state education. So-called free education is getting to be more and more a party education, Catholic or tomorrow perhaps communist. And if you want to defend the principle of a school where you can freely discuss matters, you have to defend state education. The difficulties to which Mr. Russell Kirk referred this morning that have arisen in the United States against the education bill which has been proposed by Mr. Kennedy are in part true in Italy too. You have the extreme wing of the Catholic movement that does not want to accept a certain large education bill which is before Parliament in 2 years because they believe they don't get enough out of it. And on the other side, those who feel that it is the first duty is to defend what remains of free education in private schools, the state schools, feel too much risk to be given. But then when you come to schools, I would like to say that you have another and perhaps larger and more general problem. It is the problem of the use to be made of the growing resources of our communities for certain common ends which were rose once upon a time, the traditional thing which the king built. Today, it may be schools, it may be education. There's no doubt that we are confronted everywhere with a problem of education which goes to the very root of the problem with which we are confronted, that is, the creation of a liberal democracy, the creation of a mass, non-mass society, of a society which is a mass society by its numbers and its technique, and a non-mass society by its education. The problem of turning the whole of, not the whole of England, but the whole of the Western world into a modern equivalent of the Oxfordshire village to which Mr. Lowe referred, which is perhaps a little more difficult of continuing to run one part of the village under very peculiar circumstances. And that is very considerably a problem of education. Also, liberalism has been the battle against privilege ever since its inception. If there is one privilege left today in our democracies, it is education. Education in this country, in the continent of Europe, I know in the United States things are different. Perhaps in England they're starting to become different. But in these countries, certainly, education is still, to a very great extent, a matter of class. The boy who has a certain kind of father goes to certain schools and becomes, in turn, a doctor, a lawyer, or whatever it is. The boy who hasn't got the proper father does not. There are exceptions, of course, and very glorious exceptions, but they are exceptions. And the great structural reform which we need is to break down this last-rate privilege if we want to be able to tell the masses that their future is in liberty and not in totalitarian democracy. And don't let us forget what the Russians in their own way are doing for education in Russia. I believe there is one other problem which is of the same character, which is housing, or more generally, town and country planning. It is very difficult to tell the masses that freedom is their way if we allow them to live in the slums, which still make up a very large part of all the great cities of Europe, and even in those new slums which we are building today, which seem another great reform of structure, take the socialist expression, and to use it properly, to which His Highness Otto von Habsburg referred this morning. That is the defense of a common man against encroachments by authority, or by, let us say, by the abuse of authority in a growingly powerful state. A thing which cannot be done only with the forms of the past, but must be done to some extent in the forms of today and of tomorrow. Now, one very last remark. Are we winning or are we losing? Are we really committing suicide, or are we fighting a very difficult battle and getting wounded and making mistakes and getting also partial defeat as happens when one fights the battle? Well, I must say that if I look at the world as a whole, and however conscious I am as a liberal politician who is the member of a small group of 19 deputies in a parliament of 600, which is gives one very well the sense of proportion and difficulties. If I look at the situation generally, my feeling is that we are not committing suicide, that we are fighting a very big battle, that has happened, a very big war, and as happens in big wars, we are experimenting some partial defeat, we are badly wounded and mauled, we are in continuous danger, but I don't think that we are committing suicide. If one looks at the history of Europe since 1914, really the war broke out then and has never stopped since, had been prepared those times before, so it broke out in 14. On the whole, the forces of democracy have held their ground and have, to some extent, even expanded. I believe that, for instance, the whole movement for the decolonization is, in a sense, a victory for us if we know how to use it. Again, it's not necessarily a victory. It is a victory if we know how to use it. The fact that we have now been able to revert to freer trade, I would say freer trade and to better notions in the management of economic matters, is also an extraordinary fact which nobody would have imagined only 20 or 30 years ago. But one thinks of the efforts of the League of Nations between the two wars in that direction and how they were continuously frustrated. What has been obtained now is very extraordinary. Also, when we think of the means of which we dispose and with which we can fight this war, they're much greater than we imagine them to be. This does not mean that we must not continuously ask ourselves what we are doing and that we must not engage ourselves 100% in the war. But despondency, I think, would be out of the place. And I don't just say this but give a pet talk. It would be rather ridiculous in an audience like this. But I believe that objectively it is true. And that sometimes this feeling of despondency arises out of an unsubconscious feeling that liberalism cannot manage the age of mass democracy, which I believe to be quite the reverse of the truth. I think in the long run, we can manage it, and the others cannot manage it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.